Welcome to Food Navigator USA's Soup to Nuts podcast with Elizabeth Crawford, where I dish with trendsetters, tastemakers, and industry experts about everything from emerging trends to regulatory pressures to marketing strategies. Meaningful innovation in the consumer packaged good industry has ground to a halt post-pandemic for all but a quote-unquote elite 20% of companies, according to the Boston Consulting Group's latest Build for the Future survey, which analyzes insights from more than 1,000 C-suite executives, including from 68 CPG companies, about their ability to harness their innovation vision to accelerate growth, enhance operations, and compete effectively. This does not mean that packaged food players are not launching new products, because some are, but rather that most launches in recent years rarely go beyond short-term iterations for existing brands, such as flavor extensions or packaging reconfigurations, which BCG says carry low risk and deliver easily measurable returns, but yield limited rewards. To successfully generate value and engage consumers, BCG argues companies must offer new products, services, experiences, and business models that go beyond core offerings. They need to enhance their operational excellence by adopting novel processes, technologies, and business models, and they need to preempt disruptions and obsolescence. If this sounds like a tall order, that's because it is. But it's also one that Adam Malonis, the CEO and founder of Boston-based food innovation lab Chew, says he believes he can fill by dramatically changing the model of his already successful business, which in the past 10 and a half years has helped to create more than 4,000 products across 25 categories, including some for the largest food and beverage brands in the world, and co-author more than 40 patents or patent applications in the food industry. In this episode of Food Navigator USA's Soup to Nuts podcast, Malonis shares his new approach to innovation, which includes teaming with, quote, game-changing celebrities, who are the face of the new ventures that can serve as bolt-ons for existing core strategic billion-dollar brands. He also shares how he is branching out to work with governments and non-governmental organizations to help democratize healthy food through education and policy. So according to Malonis, the impetus for turning his business upside down and adopting a new innovation model was his irritation with the status quo and the growing innovation gap that began pre-pandemic, but which has metastasized during the lockdowns following the outbreak of COVID-19 and the subsequent inflationary period that prompted many investors to withdraw their funds.
I think there's a kind of a timely narrative here right now as well, which is something that we're calling the innovation gap. Essentially, what's happened is over, let's call it during COVID, right? Beginning of COVID, up until the beginning of COVID, everyone was about new, right? If you come to this particular show, you'd see, frankly, some of the dumbest ideas that were getting crazy amounts of funding, and you were getting the VCs and PEs who were battling each other to fund these ridiculous ideas that would never scale and never be profitable. But the problem is it was a seller's market, right? And so therefore, dumb ideas were flourishing. Beginning of COVID, retailers closed their sales door and said no new distribution. In some cases, they were giving dates of no new sales calls for like 2 or 3 years. So therefore, what everyone started to focus on was the topic at hand, which was supply chain optimization, efficiency in plants because they couldn't run with the amount of people that they once upon a time did. So all of the quote-unquote innovation, I don't call it innovation, but that R&D work was going towards things that, frankly, the consumer did not benefit from. That was to the benefit of the manufacturer, of the brands, etc., not the consumer. So for a period of time, and frankly, for a period of time, everybody was winning because consumption behaviors changed. People weren't eating out as much or at all, obviously. The core staples like paper towel, toilet paper, Campbell's tomato soup, all this sort of stuff were flourishing because everyone was going into this almost, you know, nuclear age of like, let's stock the bunker. And so that encouraged the type of R&D that we saw. And then, of course, anyone could have seen it coming, the bubble burst, because everyone's houses were full to the brim of all of this stuff. And then all of a sudden, those brands that were growing at the rate they were stopped growing, right? And many of them started declining. And so, again, we could see this coming. Now, all of a sudden, with inflation and all of these sorts of issues that were at hand as well, we now start seeing cost optimization, right? Not only cost optimization, how do you make the product, frankly, how do you make it cheaper? But then also, how do you pull the price lever at retail, right? So you've got this popular notion now around shrinkflation. That's kind of price pack architecture of trying to, how do you get more from less, essentially? And so you've pulled all of those levers to death, none of which, again, are benefiting. Actually, what you could argue there, it's diminishing value for the consumer. And so we've gone through that period. Now, all of a sudden, consumers have got this pent-up demand for what's new. And retailers and brands, all they've got are new flavor extensions of existing blockbuster brands, right? Frankly, things that, again, are meaningful for the company, but they don't move the conversation of innovation. They don't satisfy the need for exploration and experience from a consumer. And so we're in a market right now, and then one of those other interesting factors, or interesting slash heartbreaking, is during this period of time, capital's dried up. Small companies, medium-sized companies, and frankly, even some big companies couldn't get the funding they needed because the old rules of path to profitability or one day profitable didn't rule anymore. And unless you were profitable or imminently profitable, you weren't getting funded. So those small and medium-sized companies in which big companies would use as their, I call that model, innovation by acquisition model, right? So if you can't innovate, go out and buy it. Well, if you go out to market today, there's nothing to buy because they've all gone. So we're stuck in this gap right now.
To make matters worse, Malone said many of the large companies that have funding for meaningful innovation need 2 to 4 years from ideation to launch, which he says is too long for consumers, retailers, and the industry at large to wait. Malone posits that he can help shorten the time from insight to execution to 6 months with his new business model, which he says includes 2 prongs that will work synergistically.
We're dramatically changing the model. We're flipping a part of the model from entirely kind of service, work for hire kind of driven, to now there'll be a part of what we do, which is going to be this venture incubation model in which we are creating ventures which will either bolt on to existing core strategic billion-dollar brands, and we're also now working with some pretty interesting game-changing celebrities to create these custom companies which will have a face behind each one of those. So there'll be 2 models which are synergistic to each other, working in concert with each other. There's the service-based model in which we can impact billion-dollar brands on what they're currently doing today. That's where we get the opportunity and the privilege to make profound impact today on things that are in market today. There's the venture incubation model, which is the working on the things of tomorrow, right? So under that venture incubation model, there would be the things that are being designed to bolt onto core strategic billion-dollar brands, to really evolve those, to contemporize those. Then there is the part of the celebrity part, which is essentially just putting a face and candidly a megaphone behind the success of each one of those products, speaking to very specific audiences, particularly using things like YouTube and social media and all of that to be able to promote that on a daily basis and drive those sorts of sales to the masses.
Under the new venture incubation prong of the business model, Malone says Chu will work on 6 projects at a time for an annual output of 12 bolt-on-ready innovations a year. He explains that his team will identify and evaluate where to focus by juxtaposing traditional consumer data with disparate other data gathered in part with help from AI, but analyzed by humans.
The way that we are identifying these 6 tracks are really internally. So we've got an insights and strategy function that are constantly working on insights. There's this interesting paradox that exists in the marketplace in which most of the data that that these large companies are using is really all the same data that everybody is seeing. We don't rule out the traditional sources of data. That is a single data point, not the entire data point. We also then juxtapose that with non-traditional data, right? We have functions internally around culinary. So from culinary, we look at global culinary trends. We look at what's happening in kind of key leading restaurants, change makers, taste makers around the world, right? Different ingredient technology and things like that as well. The science team are constantly reviewing analyzing papers, patents, what's happening on the kind of trademark and IP and all of that front. So we've got all of that. We've got this, all this heat mapping that goes on to see exactly where all the kind of heat is. We've got, you know, all sorts of different things around ethnography. We've got, frankly, just a ton of different inputs that we bring all together. And then essentially we have what's called essentially the clash. So we bring all of those different, sometimes disparate sources of data. And that's where the human component comes in. We also use a whole bunch of AI as well to really sift, sort, and scrape the immense amounts of data that are out there. The synthesis is really human because sometimes that consumer behavior can be irrational, and we need irrational, fallible humans to be able to kind of synthesize that as well. So it's really that mosaic of everything at our disposal. We're living in an age right now where we are so data rich but synthesis poor. Then the analytics team will then quantify what's that worth and make sure that, again, the juice is worth the squeeze, that it's not a $50 million opportunity at the top end, right? We want to make sure these are meaningful, substantial things that are actually going to really move the needle. There may be a case where there are existing entrepreneurs out there who have got a blockbuster idea but don't have the resources in order to move it forward. So there may be some flexibility to open up some of those tracks.
So where might Chew place its bets? Malona says he sees significant potential for plant-based meat analogs, despite what a chorus of naysayers are extolling.
I'm going to probably run the risk of sounding like a cliche, but we have been super prolific in the plant-based meat analog space. You know, we see it very differently than everybody else. Everyone's, crying from the hilltop saying that, there's the death of this industry, and there's one side of the industry, which is the animal protein side, who are saying, see, look, we told you this thing wasn't going to work. And you've got the plant-based side of things who are talking about their side of it. And, you know, first and foremost, I see myself as much more moderate. And I see that this is not just plant-based or meat-based. I think that in the world that we need to create, I think it's both. And I think this polarization of both sides is, I think it mirrors a lot of our politics at the moment. But we see the, let's say, I don't call it the decline of this industry. I call it the normalization, right? It got overheated. It got over-speculated. All that happened is a correction in my mind right now. And we see the opportunity, the glaring opportunity right now, is the fact that this market got flooded with so many different, frankly, weak, pathetic products that were healthy in name only, but actually were inferior to their, mostly inferior to their animal-based counterparts. Wave two is going to have parity nutritionals, at least, or better, parity taste, or better, parity pricing, or better. Right? So accessibility, taste, all of these things that are important to consumers. So, you know, we see there's all this sensational chatter about the industry's dying. It's not going to amount to anything. We see it now as the shepherding in of wave two, the things that stand up on their own without the sloppy marketing euphemisms of plant-based equals healthy, free from equals healthy, gluten-free equals healthy. Like, these things do not equal healthy. They just equal, it's not this or it doesn't have that. So that's where we see some of this opportunity, where we fly in the face of what people are talking about, and we really try to pick into the less sexy, less sensational side of the story, and we try to then pick into, like, what's driving that, what's the consumer behavior, what are they looking for, what are they missing, where are the opportunities.
He also sees an unmet need for snacks that meet consumers' macro-level need states, and for complete disruption in beverage, which he argues may not come from new companies, but by revamping and modernizing existing brands. While Chew is adopting a new approach to product development, Malonis is a firm believer that there is not just one way to innovate, and so he encouraged other players to amp up their irritation a little bit and look for meaningful solutions that can profitably scale and help future-proof the food system. With that, we've reached the end of another episode of Food Navigator USA's Soup to Nuts podcast. I hope that you'll join me again for another installment. And to ensure that you do, I encourage you to subscribe. Until next time, this is Elizabeth Crawford wishing you a productive, profitable, and safe week.